We know exactly where we're going. The billboard started popping up about 20 miles back. The huge and hairy face of the Boggy Creek Monster, inviting us to visit Fouke's one and only Monster Mart. We're close now, and the tree-lined highway is pretty desolate. So I break my own rule and really start gunning it. Sarah peers out her window, craning her neck at one of the faded Monster Mart signs. "Just a couple more miles," she says quietly. "Are you ready?" I ask, sensing some apprehension in her voice. "I hope so," she says. I pull the car over just before the exit for Fouke. This isn't exactly a thriving tourist destination. More like the kind of dinky, small-town thing that bored traveling families will stop off at to snap a few pictures and get a bathroom break. "Probably a good idea to go on foot from here," I say, glancing at Six. "We'll want to be invisible." Six nods.
"Agreed."
We pile out of the car and into the dark woods that separate the highway from the town. Bernie Kosar briefly stretches his legs before taking on the form of a sparrow. He lands on my shoulder, awaiting instructions. "Scout ahead, BK," I say. "See what's up there." As BK soars off into the night, the three of us ready ourselves. I snap my bracelet onto my wrist. I certainly haven't missed the painful tingling feeling I get whenever I wear it, but I'll definitely feel safer with it on. I tuck my dagger into the back of my pants. Watching me, Sarah takes her gun out of her backpack and shoves it into the waistband of her jeans as well. All those road trip fantasies of a couple hours ago are gone. It's time for action. We start into the woods, the dim lights of Fouke about a mile away through the trees. Sarah grabs hold of my arm.
"Do you think we'll see the Boggy Creek Monster?" she asks, widening her eyes in mock terror.
"From the pictures, it looks a lot like Bigfoot.
Maybe we can make friends."
Six warily scans the woods around us.
"Some dumb folk legend isn't the monster I'm worried about running into."
"Besides," I add, trying to keep things light for Sarah's benefit, "who needs a Sasquatch when we've got 9 waiting for us back in Chicago?" Like Six, I'm also searching the woods for any sign of Mogadorian ambush. It's eerily quiet out here, the dead branches that crunch beneath our feet sounding like fireworks. I hope that we've beaten the Mogs to Five's location, that they weren't as quick to figure out his weird riddle as we were. The fact that there isn't a new scar on my ankle, and that the small town up ahead doesn't appear to be engulfed by flames from a recent battle, are both really good signs. Still, we have to stay on our guard. There's no telling what might be waiting for us up ahead. As we get closer, Six reaches her hands out to us. Sarah has to let go of my arm to take hold of Six. I wish there was time for one last hug, just a quick moment to reassure her. With each of us holding one of Six's hands, she turns us invisible. We walk on. We're deep in the woods, the highway far behind us, when I notice BK gliding in circles through the trees. "Down here," I call out to him. I let go of Six's hand so that BK can see us. He flutters down, transforming into a squirrel as soon as he hits the ground. "BK says there's a guy up ahead," I tell them. "No sign of any trouble."
"Good. Let's move."
I take Six's hand and we pick up the pace, soon emerging from the woods and into the small town of Fouke. It really isn't much more than just a pit stop. The road that connects to the highway exit continues on to the east. I see a few small houses in that direction, and what I assume is the town proper. Where we are is pretty much the beginning of the town, right where travelers would pull off from the road. There's a 2-pump gas station next to us and a post office across the street. All the windows are dark, everything closed and locked up for the night. And then there's the Monster Mart. The billboards on the way into town really oversold it. The Monster Mart is really just a convenience store with Boggy Creek Monster t-shirts and hats on sale in the window. The main attraction is the 12-foot wooden statue of the Boggy Creek Monster, a hairy beast that looks like it's part man, part bear, and part gorilla. Even at this distance, I can see the statue is pretty much covered in bird poop.
"There," whispers Sarah excitedly. "I see him, too. There's a boy up ahead, sitting cross-legged at the base of the statue. He looks bored as he unwraps a sandwich from some wax paper. A backpack rests next to him, but no sign of a Lorik chest that I can tell. I expected him to at least have that. It would have made it easy to identify him. Then again, it would have made it easier for the Mogadorians, too. I start forward, but Six stays planted, not letting go of my hand.
"What is it?" I whisper.
"I don't know," she replies quietly. "He's just out here all alone. It all seems too easy, like a trap."
"Maybe," I say, looking around again doubtfully. "There are no signs of life except for us and the boy at the statue. If the Mogadorians are lying in wait, they're doing a really good job hiding."
"Maybe he just got lucky," Sarah whispers. "I mean, he has managed to stay hidden longer than the rest of you."
"How do we know he is who he says he is?" Six continues.
"Only one way to find out," I say. I let go of Six's hand and start across the street. I don't try to conceal my approach. He notices me almost as soon as I step away from Six and into the yellow glow of the streetlights. He drops his sandwich and hops quickly to his feet, reaching both hands into his pockets. For a moment, I think he's about to pull some kind of weapon on me, and I feel my lumens start to warm up in anticipation. Instead, he pulls two small balls from his pockets. One of them, a rubber bouncy ball, and the other, a steel ball bearing. He rolls them deftly across his knuckles, watching anxiously as I approach. It's like some kind of nervous tic. I stop a few yards away from him. "Hey."
"Hey,"
he replies. At this distance, I can finally get a good look at our would-be five. He's about my age, shorter and stockier. Not necessarily chubby, but definitely built like a barrel. His hair is brown and short, a military buzz cut style. He's wearing one of those goofy Boggy Creek Monster t-shirts and a pair of baggy jeans. "Are you waiting for me?" I ask, not wanting to just come out and ask if he's Lorik. He could be some weird country kid eating a sandwich at night all by himself, I guess.
"I don't know," he replies. "Let me see your leg."
I hesitate for a moment, then reach down and lift up the leg of my pants. He breathes a sigh of relief as he looks over my scars. Then he lifts up his jeans and shows me his matching set. Through some deft sleight of hand, the two balls disappear back into his pocket and then five strides forward, his now empty hand extended.
"I'm five," he says.
"Four," I reply. "My friends call me John."
"A human name?"
he says.
"Man, I've had too many of those to even remember."
We shake hands. His grip is like a vice. He's so excited. For a moment, I'm worried he won't let go. I clear my throat and try to discreetly tug my hand away.
"Sorry,"
he says, dropping my hand awkwardly.
"I'm just psyched. I've waited so long for this. I wasn't sure anyone would see my message. It's not easy making a crop circle, you know. I didn't want to do it again."
"Yeah, That wasn't such a good idea, I say. I start looking around again, still worried that Mogadorians are going to appear at any moment. Crickets chirp nearby, and beyond that, I hear the sound of engines from the highway. Nothing to get nervous about, but I still can't shake the feeling of being exposed.
Not a good idea,
Five says excitedly.
But you found me. It worked. Did I do something wrong?
Five seems so eager to please, like he's just waiting for me to congratulate him on his crop-burning stunt. It's as if he never considered it could attract unwanted attention, which strikes me as naive. Maybe I'm judging him too harshly, but he seems soft to me. Sheltered. Or maybe I've spent too much time around hard cases like 6 and 9. Don't worry about it, I tell him. It's fine. We should get going.
Oh,
he mutters, his face falling. He looks away from me, scanning the area.
Is it just you? I hope maybe you'd gotten together with some of the others.
On cue, 6 and Sarah materialize at my side. 5 stumbles backwards, nearly tripping over his backpack. 6 steps forward.
I'm 6, she says, blunt as ever. John is too nice to tell you that your crop circle stunt probably could have gotten you killed. It was stupid. You're lucky we got here first.
5 frowns, looking from 6 to me.
Wow, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cause trouble. I didn't know what else to do.
It's okay, I say, nodding at his pack. Grab your stuff. We can talk it out on the road.
Where are we going?
We're bringing you back to the others, I say. We're all together now. It's time to start the fight.
You're all together?
I nod. You're the last one.
Wow,
5 says, looking almost embarrassed.
Sorry I'm late to the party.
Come on, I say, waving again at his pack. We really need to move. 5 leans down and grabs his backpack, and then looks at Sarah, who's been standing by silently.
What number are you?
She shakes her head. I'm just Sarah, she says, smiling.
A human ally?
Breathes 5, shaking his head.
Guys, my mind is officially blown.
6 shoots me a look of bewilderment. I've got the same feeling. Maybe we've been through too many fights and close calls, but it seems like 5 is way too casual. We should already be on the move, away from this place.
And he just wants to stand here and chat.
Look,
6 snaps.
We can't just stand around gabbing. They could be
6 is cut off by the sudden roar of a noise overhead. It's a sound made by no earthly machinery. We all look up just as the silver Mogadorian ship throws on its floodlights, momentarily blinding us. 5, shielding his eyes, turns to look at me.
Is that your ship?
He asks.
Mogadorians!
I shout at him. Already, dark shapes are descending from the ship. The first wave of Mogadorian warriors on their way to attack.
Oh,
says 5, blinking confusedly at the ship.
So that's what they look like.
Chapter 13.
Get the Zitharis stone out,
I shout to 6.
If we all go invisible now, we can get away before they're on us.
She begins fumbling through her bag and pulls it out, but it's too late. Before she can do anything, the air around us crackles as the first wave of Mogadorians let loose with blaster fire. My bracelet expands just in time to deflect a pair of shots that would have hit me right in the chest. Instead, the fire hits the ground close enough to 6 to send her toppling backwards. As she's falling, she tosses 5 the Zitharis stone, but he just stares at it, clearly unsure of what it is. There's no time to school him. Beyond the first group of Mogs, I can see more of them zipping down on ropes from the belly of their ship. We're going to be outnumbered in a bad way soon. Sarah has already dived behind a nearby parked car. On her side in the dirt, she squeezes off shots with her pistol. I watch the first two kick up dirt at the feet of the nearest Mogadorian, and then the third nails him right in the sternum. The Mog disintegrates, and Sarah takes aim on another. Six went invisible as soon as she hit the dirt. I'm not sure where she is now, but storm clouds are suddenly roiling overhead on what moments ago was a calm and clear night. She's definitely getting ready to strike. Five is next to me, rooted in place, still staring at the rock in his hand. My shield is taking a lot of blaster fire now. Five would probably have already been gunned down if he wasn't right next to me. "What are you doing?" I scream at him, roughly grabbing his arm. "We have to move!" Five's eyes are wide and unresponsive. He lets me pull him backwards. I toss him to the ground behind the statue of the Boggy Creek Monster. The wooden statue quickly explodes into a thousand charred pieces, but the concrete base holds off the rest of the blaster fire for now. I let my lumen ignite on my unshielded hand, building up a sizable fireball. Five watches me, staring in shock at the swirling flames. I ignore him for the moment and lean out from cover, launching the fireball at the nearest group of Moogs. It engulfs three of them, turning them to ash instantly. The rest scatter. I hear raindrops starting to fall, although none are hitting me. In fact, the rain seems localized over by the Mogadorian ship. Thunder rumbles. Whatever Six's play is, I trust her. "Are you all right?" I shout over to Sarah. The car she's hiding behind is only a few yards away, but it feels like the length of an entire battlefield.
"I'm fine," she yells back. "You?"
"I'm good, but I think Five is shell-shocked or something." I notice three Mogadorians cutting across the street, trying to flank Sarah. Before they can, I reach out with my telekinesis and yank their blasters out of their hands. Seeing them, Sarah shoots the closest one right between the eyes. Before the rest can draw their swords, a lithe shape lunges at them from the shadows. Bernie Kosar in the form of a panther. His black fur, nearly indistinguishable from the night, tears out the throat of a Moog he's pinned down, then slashes the other across the face. That group decimated, BK slinks around the side of the car, staying close to Sarah. "Keep her safe," I direct the thought at BK. The Moogs that I scattered before are already regrouping. Or maybe it's just another group descended from the ship. I sling two more fireballs in their direction. That should keep them busy for a moment. I grab Five and shake him until he looks at me. The shoulder of his shirt is singed from where my hand was, still too hot from the lumen. He flinches, staring at me with wide eyes.
"What the hell is the matter with you?" I yell.
I'm sorry," he stammers. "I've never seen a Mogadorian before."
I look at him in disbelief.
"Are you kidding me?"
"No. Albert Maysepani told me about them. We trained for fighting. I've just never actually done it."
"Great,"
growls Six, suddenly materializing next to us.
"We've got a total rookie."
I can help,"
Five mumbles.
"I was just caught off guard."
I'm not feeling too convinced, and although we fought the first wave of Mogadorians off, I can still see their shapes moving through the darkness nearby.
"Is it over?"
shouts Sarah from her position.
"Because I'm almost out of bullets."
"There are more coming," I yell back to Sarah, and then look at Six. "Can you take down their ship?" Six concentrates for a moment. Lightning shears through the night sky, right into the side of the Mogadorian ship. It rocks back and forth, and I can see some Moog soldiers lose their grip on their ropes and plummet 50 feet to the ground.
She's cooked up one serious storm and is just waiting to unleash its full fury.
They might have flown in here, Six says, but they sure as shit won't be flying out.
I look down at Five. His shaky hands have retrieved those two balls from his pockets once again, not exactly confidence-inspiring. I glance over at Sarah and see her taking aim and hitting a Mogadorian that was trying to creep up on us. Not long ago, this is the kind of fight we would have run from, happy to just escape with our lives. Now, though, I feel like it's a fight we can actually win. I lock eyes with Six.
Let's send Cetricus Ra a message. If he wants to get one of ours, he's going to need to send more than one ship.
Hell yeah,
answers Six and raises both her hands to the sky. The dark clouds around the Mogadorian ship begin to roil and swirl. Three bolts of lightning slice through the tumultuous sky, striking the side of the ship in rapid succession. I can see pieces of the metal hull breaking loose and careening to the ground below. Probably realizing that they're in trouble, the Mogs try to gain some altitude and get away from the localized storm. The Mogs already on the ground redouble their efforts to get to us. Blaster fire sizzling through the air. I inch closer to Six so that my shield will deflect any stray shots that come her way. Sarah stays hunkered down behind the car, firing blindly over the hood.
You need to hurry up,
I shout at Six through gritted teeth.
Almost there,
she snaps, her face tight with concentration. Hail stones the size of fists buffet the ship, causing it to shake erratically. Just when it seems like it might be able to pull upwards, Six twists her hands over her head. The clouds suddenly coalesce. I can feel the force of the winds from back here. A tornado gathering right beneath the ship. The ship lurches and then tips sideways, its pilots losing control. The ship plummets to the ground, landing with a thunderous crash in the woods by the highway. Seconds later, a tower of flame shoots into the night sky, followed by a thunderous explosion. Then, everything is quiet. The storm overhead clears, and the night is peaceful once again.
Wow,
murmurs Five. Nice work, I tell Six. Her eyes have already moved to her next targets. We might have taken down their ship, but there are still plenty of Mogadorians approaching. A couple dozen at least. Blasters and swords at the ready.
Let's finish them off,
Six says, turning invisible. I'm eager to jump into the fight. First, I look down at number Five. He's peeking at the incoming Mogadorians uncertainly. It's okay if you're not ready for this, I tell him. Hang back. Five nods mutely. I step out from behind what's left of the Boggy Creek monster statue. Immediately, there's a Mogadorian leveling his blaster at me. Before he can shoot, something hits him in the back of the knees from behind. The sword he carries strapped across his shoulder is unsheathed by invisible hands and plunged through his spine. He disintegrates, and, briefly, through the cloud of ash, I can make out Six's silhouette. I run to where Sarah is still crouched behind a parked car. The side that faced the Mogadorians is melted in spots, but Sarah appears unharmed. As soon as I slide to the ground beside her, Bernie Kosar sprouts wings and takes off, hurling himself at a pair of Mogs. The remaining Mogadorians look almost confused. Their ship destroyed, half their number already killed. I doubt they were expecting a fight like this.
Good.
Let them be the scared ones for once. You okay? I ask Sarah.
Yeah,
she replies breathlessly. She holds up her gun.
I'm out.
I reach out with my telekinesis and reel in one of the discarded Mogadorian blasters. Sarah plucks it out of the air.
Cover me,
I tell her. We're finishing this. I stride out from behind the car, practically daring the Mogadorians to come at me.
A pair hunkered down in front of the gas station fire at me. My shield deploys immediately, absorbing their shots. I think about hurling a fireball at them, but I don't want to blow up the gas station. We've already damaged poor Falk, Arkansas enough. I use my telekinesis to grab their blasters, smashing them to the ground. Then I raise my hand to the Moogs and motion for them to come on. They grin, their tiny teeth gleaming in the moonlight, and unsheath their swords. They sprint towards me. As soon as they're a safe distance from the gas station, I launch a fireball that engulfs them both. Idiots. Another group of Moogs has regrouped enough to make a focused assault. They charge me all at once, trying to surround me. Before they can close in, I feel something rubbery wrap itself tightly around my waist, and I'm yanked backwards, away from the incoming Moogs. Startled, I look down. An arm is coiled around me. A really long, stretched-out arm. As soon as I'm clear, Sarah starts lighting up the group of Moogs with blaster fire. I look back down in time to see Five's arm coil back to its normal shape and return to his T-shirt. He looks at me sheepishly.
"Sorry if I interrupted," he says. "Thought you might get pinned down."
"What did you just do?" I ask, both curious and a little grossed out.
"My Sapon called it Externa,"
Five explains. He holds up the rubber ball that he's been fondling since we showed up.
"It's one of my legacies. I can take on the qualities of whatever I'm touching."
"Nice," I reply. Maybe the new guy isn't so useless after all. One of the Mogadorians manages to skirt Sarah's blaster fire and charge us. Five steps in front of me. His skin suddenly gleams in the moonlight, shiny and silver. I remember the other ball he was carrying, a steel ball bearing. The Moog swings his sword at Five in an arc that should cleave right into his forehead, but with a resounding clang, the sword bounces off Five's head. The Moog is stunned as Five winds up, delivering a massive haymaker, his steel-coated hand crushing the Moog's skull. Five looks back at me.
"Never, actually tried that before."
He starts laughing, relieved. "Seriously?" I can't help but laugh, too. Five's nervous energy contagious. "What if it hadn't worked?" Five just shrugs, rubbing the spot on his forehead where the Moog's sword made contact. We turn to watch a pair of Mogadorians fleeing towards the woods, Bernie Kosar snarling at their heels. Before they reach the tree line, Six appears in front of them. She slashes through them both with her borrowed Mogadorian sword. I look around. The area is clear. The Monster Mart and its surroundings are pockmarked from blaster fire, and there's still a plume of smoke curling from the woods. Besides the dark patches on the ground, where the dead Mogadorians turned to ash, there is no sign of our attackers. We wiped them out. Sarah walks over to us, the Moog blaster propped up on her shoulder.
"Is that it?"
"I think so," I say, keeping my voice level. I feel like fist-pumping and high-fiving, but want to keep it cool. For once, I think we caught them by surprise.
"Is it always this easy?"
Five asks. "No," I tell him. "Now that we're all together, though." I trail off, not wanting to jinx it. That fight couldn't have gone much better. Granted, it was only one ship worth of Mogadorians. They've got entire armies stationed in West Virginia and elsewhere, not to mention Cetricus Ra. Even so, we mowed them down in record time, and I don't think any of us suffered an injury. Yesterday, when Nine was all gung-ho for storming West Virginia and seeking out a rematch with Cetricus Ra, I tried to get across, and I didn't think we were ready for that. Now, after this performance, Maybe it's time to reconsider our odds. Where's Six? I ask, glancing around. Someone must have heard that ship crash. We need to get out of here before the cops show. As if in answer, a low rumble comes from the tree line, from the direction where the Mogadorian ship fell. I shine my lumen that way, just in time to see Six sprinting towards us, waving her arms.
"Incoming!"
she shouts.
"What's incoming?"
Five asks, swallowing. "Sounds like Piken," I reply. There's a sharp, breaking noise. The sound of a tree being uprooted and snapped. Something huge is coming this way. I put my hand on Sarah's shoulder. "Get back," I tell her. "You need to stay behind us." She looks at me, her grip tight on the Mogadorian blaster. For a moment I'm worried she's going to argue, even though she knows fighting a Piken is way different than being in a firefight with Mogs. Shooting from behind cover is one thing. Going toe-to-toe with a monster that thinks blaster fire tickles? That's something else entirely. Sarah touches my hand, lets her fingers linger for just a moment, and then breaks away, running for cover near the post office.
"What the hell is that?"
asks Five, still standing next to me, now pointing towards the tree line. We both see the monster at the same time, as it bursts from the trees, bearing down on Six. But I don't answer Five. I actually can't answer, because whatever this thing is, I don't have a name for it. It's like a centipede, the size of a tanker truck, its worm-like body covered in cracked and leathery skin. Hundreds of tiny, gnarled arms extend from its body, churning up earth as it rumbles forward with surprising quickness. At the front is a face sort of reminiscent of a pit bull, flat, with a wet snout, and a slavering mouth that opens upon rows of jagged teeth. In the center of its face is a single unblinking eye, bloodshot and full of malice. I remember the horde of creatures the Mogs had caged in West Virginia. As nasty beasts go, this guy would be at the top of my list. Fast as Six is, she isn't faster than this thing. The centipede draws even with her and then jerks sideways. Its back half, the tail, pivots upwards, the bulk of it towering over Six for a moment before crashing down. Six throws herself to the side just in time to avoid being crushed. Chunks of ground spray out from where the tail landed and made a huge indentation in the ground. Six is quickly back on her feet, driving her sword into the centipede's body. It hardly seems to notice, its twisting body recoiling with enough speed to jerk the sword out of Six's hands.
"How are we supposed to kill that thing?"
Five asks, taking a step back. My mind races for an answer. What advantages do we have over this one-eyed worm thing? It's fast, but bulky and confined to the ground. "You can fly, right?" I ask Five.
"How do you know that?"
he asks, his eyes locked on the beast.
"Yeah, I can."
"Pick me up," I tell him. "We need to stay above this thing." As the centipede rounds on Six again, I see Bernie Kosar leap onto its back. He's back in panther form, digging his claws deep through the monster's hide. With an annoyed squeal, the centipede rolls through the dirt, forcing BK to jump off or be crushed beneath its bulk. The distraction is enough for Six to create some distance between her and the beast. She turns invisible.
"It'll be easier if you're on my back,"
Five says, kneeling down in front of me. I'd feel goofy hopping on Five's back, piggyback style, if it wasn't a life-or-death situation. As soon as I'm on, Five shoots into the air. It isn't like the shaky levitation we can all manage using our telekinesis. He's fast, precise, in control.
Five gets us about 30 feet in the air, right above the centipede. I start bombarding the creature with fireballs, tossing them down as fast as I can generate them. Charred sores open up on its back, a horrible stink rising up in the air.
"Disgusting!"
mutters Five. The centipede roars in pain, coiling in on itself. Its huge eye sweeps frantically across the battlefield. Its tiny brain can't really register where the pain is coming from. I keep up the assault, hoping I can kill this thing from above before it even knows what's happening. My next fireball flies wide of the beast as Five dips suddenly towards the ground. Jostled, I grab onto the back of his shirt until he's flying straight again. His shirt is soaked through with sweat.
"You all right?"
I ask, shouting to be heard over the rushing wind and the howling centipede.
"Not easy carrying around a flamethrower,"
he yells back, trying to joke, but his voice sounds strained.
"Just another minute. Hang in there."
The centipede's eye rolls back in its head and up, spotting us. It roars again, this time almost gleefully, and then its body lances upwards, all its tiny arms grasping at the air. Its hideous face shoots towards us, teeth gnashing. Five screams, and we zip backwards in the air, the beast swallowing empty space where we used to be. The sudden change in direction throws me off Five's back, my hand clutching a ripped piece of his t-shirt. I'm falling. I'm able to push against the ground enough with my telekinesis to somewhat cushion my landing. If not for that, I probably would have broken a leg hitting the ground. Still, the wind is knocked out of me, and to make matters worse, I hit the ground right in front of the beast. Distantly, I can hear Six and Sarah shouting at me to run. It's too late for that. The centipede is just 40 yards away, rumbling towards me. Its mouth is wide open, a foul stench emanating from the darkness of its gullet. I brace myself and ignite my lumen all over my body. If this thing wants to make a meal out of me, I'm going to make sure I burn going down. As long as I can jump past those rows of teeth, I can probably burn my way right through the thing. Getting swallowed by a Mogadorian centipede isn't my best plan, admittedly, but in the seconds I have before it's right on top of me, it's the best I can come up with. As it gets closer, I see a red dot reflected in the centipede's eye, like the beam from a laser pointer. Where is that coming from? A single gunshot explodes from somewhere behind me. The monster's eye explodes. It's just a few yards from me, and I'm splashed with foul-smelling eye goop. It shrieks and rears up, forgetting all about me. I use the opportunity to backpedal, lobbing fireballs at the creature's underbelly as I go. The beast starts convulsing, its tail thrashing with enough force to make the ground under my feet shake. After one last massive spasm, the centipede collapses into the dirt and begins to slowly disintegrate. Five lands next to me, both of his hands on top of his head.
"Dude, I am so sorry I dropped you."
"Don't worry about it," I reply distractedly, pushing him aside and spinning towards the monster mart. No one with us was packing a sniper rifle. Where did the shot come from? Six and Sarah rush towards a tall, middle-aged man with a beard as he climbs down from the top of a beat-up old car. He's holding a rifle with a laser scope. At first, I think maybe he's just a good Samaritan. Who wouldn't shoot a giant worm creature if it was rampaging through their neighborhood? Then again, there's something about him that seems really familiar. And then I notice someone else standing next to the car. He's helping the older man down from his sniper's position. When Six gets near, she almost tackles him with a hug. My jaw drops, and I immediately break into a run. It's Sam.
Chapter 14. Six hugs me so hard that I almost fall over. Her arms are wrapped around my neck, and my hands are splayed across her back. The back of her shirt is sweaty from the battle the guard just fought, but I don't mind that at all. I'm more focused on the way her blonde hair brushes gently across my cheek. Those daydreams that I occupied myself with back when I was being held prisoner, a lot of them featured a scene just like this one. "Sam," Six whispers, stunned, holding on to me like I might disappear. "You're here." I squeeze her tighter in response. We hold on to each other for longer than is probably appropriate with everyone else around. Next to me, I hear my dad clear his throat. "Hey, Six, why don't you let someone else have a turn?" It's Sarah, sidling up next to us. Six lets me go, suddenly looking sheepish. I'm not sure I can remember seeing her tough exterior crack that much. I feel a blush creeping up my own cheeks. I'm glad it's dark out here. "Hi, Sam," Sarah says, hugging me too. "Hey," I reply. "Fancy meeting you here. It's a long way from paradise." "No kidding," Sarah replies. Over Sarah's shoulder, I watch John jog over to us. He's joined by a stocky brown-haired guy, who I assume is the number 5 who posted that message online. It's what brought Dad and me to Arkansas, his internet scanning program having picked up the news story. We drove nonstop from Texas to make it here in time for the end of the battle. While Five lingers at the back of the group, looking nervous to be meeting so many new people, John strides right towards me. A grin splits my face. It's more than just being united with my best friend. It's the feeling that we're going to be part of something great together. We're going to save the world. John grins back at me, clearly excited that I'm here. Yet there's something else in his eyes that I can't really decipher. He clasps my hand tightly. "Just answer me one question," John says abruptly, not letting go of my hand. "Do you remember that day in your room when you first thought I might be an alien?" "Yeah." "What did you do?" I squint at John, not really sure why he's asking me this. I glance back at my dad, who is watching this exchange curiously, waiting for me to introduce him to the Lorik. "I pulled a gun on you. Is that what you mean?" "Oh, Samuel," my dad mutters reproachfully. But John grins at my response. Immediately, he pulls me into a hug. "Sorry about that, Sam. I just had to make sure you weren't Cetricus Ra in disguise," John explains. "You have no idea how good it is to see you." "Same here," I reply. "I've really missed having to fight giant worm creatures." John chuckles, taking a step back from me. Five tentatively raises his hand, stepping forward. "I'm lost. Cetricus Ra can shapeshift?" That's news to me, too. I find myself subconsciously touching the burns on my wrists. I know firsthand the kind of evil Cetricus Ra is capable of. "How do you know that? Did you go up against him?" John nods, solemnly, glancing in Five's direction. "Yeah. I'd call it a draw. I'll bring you both up to speed, but first..." John's gaze moves to my dad. "Sam, is this who I think it is?" My smile grows again. It feels like I've been waiting years to introduce my friends to my dad. "Guys," I say, pride in my voice, "this is my father, Malcolm. I can confirm that he's definitely not Cetricus Ra either, if you're worried about that." My dad steps forward, shaking hands with each of the guard and Sarah. "Thanks for the help out there," John says, motioning to my dad's rifle. "Glad you brought some hardware." "Looked like you had it under control," my dad tells John. "I've just wanted to shoot something Mogadorian for a very long time." "Under control," chuckles Six, shaking her head. "Looked to me like you were about to get swallowed, John." "So it wasn't my best plan," John shrugs, smiling. Sarah pats him on the back, encouragingly. Five is studying my dad and me. "You're not Lorik," he says, matter-of-factly, like he's just put it together. "I thought for sure you must be a Saipan, being so old and all." My dad chuckles. Sorry to disappoint. Just an old human, hoping to help. Five turns to look at John, nodding. You've got a real army here. Six and I exchange a look. I'm not really sure if this new guy is being sarcastic or if he's really just kind of dense. Judging by her face, Six isn't sure either. There's the six of us here and four waiting for us back in Chicago, John says patiently. I don't think 10 people really qualifies us for army status. But thanks. I guess not, mumbles Five. I want to hear everything about how you guys found each other, John says. He looks at my dad almost cautiously, like he just knocked on our family's door and asked if I could come out and play Alien Invasion. First, Mr. Good, I just want you to know that I never meant for Sam to get wrapped up in all this. I'm sorry I've put him in danger, but I don't think we would have made it this far without him. Definitely not, Six agrees, smiling at me. I look away, feeling a blush creeping up my cheeks. My dad looks touched. Putting ourselves in danger for the safety of Earth is a good family tradition. But thank you for saying that. He rests a hand on my shoulder. I'm glad you found each other. And drop the mister. Malcolm will do just fine. There are sirens nearby, drawing closer. We might be in a rural part of Arkansas, but the local authorities would definitely notice a spaceship crashing out of the sky. They'll be here soon. We should get moving, Six says. John nods, already starting to run towards the trees. Our car is parked out by the highway. I'll ride with Sam and Malcolm, Six says. And show them the way. John, Sarah, and Five head off towards the highway. Meanwhile, as flashing lights begin crawling through Falk, my dad and I, along with Six, make for the Rambler. While my dad climbs into the driver's seat, Six touches my arm. I'm sorry if I, embarrassed you before with that hug. In front of your dad and all, I hope that wasn't weird. No way, I say, hurriedly, wanting Six to know that hug was about the best thing that's happened to me in a long time. That was really nice. Don't get used to me being all emotional, Six says, giving me a look. I think she's teasing me. You showing up just caught me off guard. So you're saying I'd have to disappear again to get another hug? Exactly, Six replies, and then starts to get into the back seat. She hesitates, thinking something over for a moment, and then suddenly hugs me again. Okay, one more. I hold Six close as my dad starts the car. His face is lit up by the car's instrument panel, and even though he's pretending not to, I can tell he's watching us. If I had my way, I'd never let her go. We'd keep right on hugging until the local cops came to arrest us. Six breaks away from me, looking into my eyes. I try to keep my expression cool and collected, but that's probably not working. For the record, she says, I never thought you were Cetricus Ra. I knew you right away. Thanks, I reply lamely, scrambling for something better to say, like how I missed her, or how amazing it is to see her now. Before I can come up with anything, Six has gotten into the back seat. She's just buckling her seatbelt when Five clears his throat. He says, what was that stone thing you threw at me? We all turn to stare at him. The Zitharis stone, you mean? Six asks. Yeah, Five says, that. I kind of, dropped it. Chapter 15. Wow, Johnny, I send you out for reinforcements and you come back with an old man, a nerd, and this little hobbit guy. Great job. Nine is there to sarcastically greet our group as soon as we enter the foyer of his ridiculous Chicago penthouse. So, my first impression of him during our brief meeting in West Virginia wasn't off after all. He really is a douchebag. We're back later than anyone thought we would be. We searched for the Zitharis stone, but it was gone, and we couldn't stick around any longer than necessary. And while no one seems very happy about it, it's like they're trying not to blame Five for losing it. For now, at least. After it was clear it was gone. After Five had apologized for the 100th time, Six just tossed her hair and shrugged. "It's a rock," she said, sounding like she was trying to convince herself. "A powerful rock, but we're pretty powerful on our own. Still, it's clear that it hasn't endeared Five to anyone, especially Nine." "Be nice," Sarah warns him. Clearly the others have gotten used to his not-so-witty banter. By the way he and John slap hands in greeting, I'd say they've even become friends. Five, though, seems wounded. Next to me, he subtly tries to suck in his belly. "Hobbit guy," he repeats, under his breath. "It's from a book," I start to explain, but he cuts me off. "I get the reference," Five says. "It isn't very nice." "That's Nine," says John, overhearing. "He'll grow on you. Or, well, you'll get used to him." Five gives me a deadpan look like he doubts it, and I can't help smiling in return. I think we're both feeling a bit like outsiders in this penthouse. Six tried to catch me up the best she could on the ride back, but there are a lot of new faces and stories here in Chicago. Not to mention the most surreal hideout in history. I still can't believe the guard are living in a place like this. It's the kind of lavish pad they used to tour on that MTV show, the one about rich celebrities and their jealousy-inducing lifestyles. How Nine and his Sapon managed to put together a place like this and keep it off the Mogadorian radar to boot is pretty impressive. John introduces everyone to Nine, who has stopped cracking lame jokes long enough to meet Five and my dad. "And you remember Sam, right?" John finishes. "Obviously," Nine says, striding forward to shake my hand. His grip is rough, and he towers over me so that I have to crane my neck up. He lowers his voice, not wanting the others to hear. "Seriously, bro. Sorry about leaving you in the cave. That was sort of my fault." "It's cool," I reply, a bit taken aback by the apology. Nine turns my hand over before letting me go, noticing the fresh pink scars on my wrists. "So they put you through it, huh?" he asks, solemnly. By his tone, it's like he's just realizing we have something in common. I guess I've joined the secret fraternity of Mogadorian torture victims. I don't know what to say. I just nod my head. "You made it out," Nine says, patting me hard on the shoulder. "Good for you, bro." John starts to lead us by Nine, who's basically been standing right in our way. He sort of reminds me of one of those big dogs that jump all over visitors as soon as they come in the door. When he finally steps aside, I notice the three other guard that Six told us about. 7, 8, and the younger, 10. They're waiting where the living room starts. A little more patient than Nine, at least letting us get inside. "If you're wondering what the horrible smell is, it's the vegetarian food Marina's cooking for dinner," says Nine. "Hey!" The dark-haired 7, Marina, replies good-naturedly. "It'll be good, I promise." "Dinner," Nine snorts. "Whatever. Who cares? We've got the whole team together. They're pudgier and dorkier than expected, but I'm cool with it. Let's go blow some shit up."
"You need to calm down, dude. We've been driving for like 12 hours, Six tells Nine, shoving a bag of equipment into his chest. "Here, make yourself useful." Sarah quickly follows suit, tossing her bag to Nine. Before long, he's shouldering pretty much all the stuff we carried up from the cars.
"Fine, I'll put this stuff away," Nine says, as he agreeably lumbers off to put away our gear. "But then we're gonna at least talk about kicking some ass."
I notice Five staring down Nine as he leaves the room. And then he turns to John. "We're not really gonna fight again right away, are we?"
John shakes his head. "Nine's just excited. Getting together was a huge first step. Now we need to figure out what to do next."
"I see," says Five, gazing down at his hands. "I guess I've never viewed violence as something to get excited about." "We're not all like Nine," Marina says apologetically as she steps forward. She greets us warmly, even pulling Five into a hug, which I think both surprises him and loosens him up a bit. She definitely puts me more at ease after Nine's brusque display. Eight introduces himself next. I get a real easygoing vibe from him. A nice change of pace from the alpha male routine Nine pulled as soon as we showed up. Still, I can tell he's just as excited as Nine was. He's just more tactful. I've got so many questions for you, all of you, Eight says. Five, I'm dying to know where you've been, to hear about everything that's happened to you. Grunts Five. Okay. I'm sure you've overcome a lot to be here, Eight continues encouragingly. The grunting is all John and I could get out of him in the car, Sarah whispers to me. I can understand feeling a bit overwhelmed in this situation. You meet the last living remnants of your people for the first time, and it turns out they've already been hanging out a bunch. In a way, it's nice to have Five with me, even though we're not talking much either. It's good to have someone equally awkward along in these social situations. You were living in Jamaica before, right? Eight asks Five. That's right, Five replies. For a little while, anyway. Eight looks like he's expecting Five to elaborate. When he doesn't, John jumps in.
It was a long ride back, and I think everyone is a little tired. Maybe we can share stories at dinner? John suggests.
Eight nods, and doesn't press Five for any more details. I get that John is trying to handle Five with kid gloves, letting him acclimate to the others at his own speed. I am a little surprised Five isn't asking more questions about the others, but part of that seems to be a reluctance to answer any questions about his own past. Judging by the fact that he showed up without a sapon or a chest, I'm sure it's the kind of grim backstory all these guard have. With Eight done trying to wring information from Five, the last of the new guard is able to step forward and introduce herself. Even though Six told me she'd be younger, I'm still surprised at how small Ella is in person. I can't imagine this girl stepping up to oppose Cetric as Ra, much less somehow being the key to scaring him off, but that's the way Six said it went. I'm impressed. I didn't know there was supposed to be a 10th guard, says Five as he shakes Ella's hand. It's the closest thing he's had to a question about the other since we walked in. There wasn't. I was sort of an accident. I notice John shoot Marina a curious look. Marina raises her eyebrows in response, mouthing, I'll tell you later. Five nods at Ella's response, studying her for a moment longer, before looking down at the floor. Huh, Five says, searching for words. I've kind of felt that way about myself, actually. Our numbers, our inheritances, the whole mission to Earth. I mean, how much thought did the Big Elders put into this whole thing? Do you think they just, like, drew our names out of a hat? Everyone is silent for a moment, staring at Five. It's a pretty strange speech, especially when you consider this is the first time the remaining guard have ever been united. It should be a celebratory time. But Five seems intent on bringing things down. Yeah, says Eight, cheerily breaking the silence. It is kind of funny when you put it like that. My dad clears his throat, his voice soft. I can assure you more thought was put into your selection than just a random drawing. He turns to Ella, giving her the same reassuring look I used to get when I'd come home from school after being bullied. And your escape from Lorien was certainly more than an accident. More like a blessing, I'd say. Right, says Five, still staring at the floor as he addresses my dad. I guess the old human would be an expert on Lorien. He glances up then, forcing a smile as he notices the rest of us fixing him with weird looks. Sorry, he adds quickly. I'm just thinking out loud. I don't know what I'm talking about either. I don't consider myself an expert, my dad says diplomatically. I'm sorry if I offended you, but I believe in the work of your elders. If I didn't, he trails off, probably thinking about the time he's spent as a Mogadorian captive. Five looks sheepish now. Four, John, I'm pretty tired. Is there a place where I can lay down for a while?
Sure, man, John replies, patting Five on the back. Why don't I show all you guys where the rooms are?
A few minutes ago, I empathize with Five for what an awkward situation this must be for him. But I don't know. Something about the way he talked to my dad really rubbed me the wrong way. There was almost a note of disdain in his voice, like my father couldn't possibly have any useful information about the guard. The whole group, minus Nine,